Fatherhood for the Rest of Us with Brandon Handley. Because you're already great at everything else, why not fatherhood too?
Hey there, and welcome to Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. This is Brandon Handley. I am the creator and founder of Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. I want to say thank you for choosing to spend your time with me today on Fatherhood for the Rest of Us. I also want to just encourage you, if you could, to go over to the podcast on iTunes, download it, subscribe to it, and leave a review if you have found any part of this at all to have an impact on your life. That will help others to find the show and listen to it and get the same type of enjoyment that you are out of it. Also, if you are a father and if you're looking for a place that you can go celebrate fatherhood or perhaps even share some struggles and get some advice or find some like-minded men, I strongly encourage you to come on over to Fatherhood for the Rest of Us, the private Facebook group, and ask to join. I'll let you right in. That's going to do it for right now, guys. And please stay tuned for today's podcast. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey there, everybody. I am on today with Kirby Ingles. Is it Ingles?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm pronouncing that right. Kirby has joined me today on Fatherhood for the Rest of Us, and over the past two decades, he's taken on numerous leadership development positions across the world, equipping the human resource and executive level leadership in the ability to achieve higher performance leading and growing their teams. Now he specializes in helping fatherless men go from where they are to where they want to be. He guides and walks alongside them to find their purpose, understand and apply their unique strengths and passions in their personal and professional lives. He works with them together to build a framework that creates an abundant and satisfying life that they desire. Tomorrow, he will be helping you make significant changes in your life so you can impact those within your circle of influence to become agents of change. Everyone has something remarkable about them, and he wants to help you to become extraordinary. Kirby, that's awesome. I love it. What can we do today that just helps you celebrate? What can we celebrate with you today?
Well, actually, I just finished running a 31-mile race on Saturday. It was actually the first one I ran with my Rhodesian Ridgeback. So it was her first ultra. And it's actually my 9th one since I started running. So I'll be it was a pretty good race to come off of. And I'm actually heading into a 3-day weekend. It's a total of 100 miles over 3 days here in about 3 weeks. So that's something that I would celebrate.
That's awesome. Absolutely. The Rhodesian Ridgeback was a beautiful dog. What have you run with your dog before? Have you ever run with animals before? And I don't mean to use that in a relationship to, you know.
No, actually I have. I had a Weimaraner that I used to run with all the time, and we'd get him up to about 10 miles and he'd kind of tucker out a little bit. He's a little bit older, but Weimaraners are probably in the top 10 dogs for trail running. So he just wasn't raised that way. So I hadn't started running him since he was a puppy and training him that way. But after he passed, we got this Rhodesian Ridgeback, and I started working with her from birth. And she's about 14 months old now. So, and she finally hit her first ultra. So it's a pretty incredible accomplishment for her.
Nice. Hey, and for you, man, 31 miles. Holy smokes. That's a lot. That's a lot of, a lot of running, brother. A lot of running. Congratulations. Let's celebrate that, man. That's great. Let's talk a little bit about your coaching, right? Your coaching fatherless fathers. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how you kind of stepped into that. Where did that come from, and what's it look like right now?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because I started this life coaching journey probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I was sitting in a cubicle in my office. You know, I've been doing HR for a long time, and I got to the point where I spent a lot of my time in meetings and writing policy and doing things of that nature. And I just wasn't really enjoying it as much. And, you know, I had been thrown into an advisory position where I was helping other people problem solve and go through different scenarios. And some of them were personal problems and some of them were work-related problems. But I was helping these individuals. And in that moment, I realized that I'd found something that I really, truly enjoyed. And it kind of took me back to my original HR days, you know, when I was at the ground level helping other folks problem solve all these HR issues that come up. And so I kind of latched on to that, and I just thought I was going to be some general life coach. I didn't know much about it. I thought eventually maybe I'll get into executive coaching where the money's at. And about a year ago, after I'd gone through a exploration phase for myself, I realized that this is something that I need to do. And I say that because I was born without knowing who my biological father was. And I was that way for about 2 or 3 years before my mother first married. She married another man. I adopted his name. And then 7 years later, the divorce. A few years later, she remarried. 7 years later, she divorced. Most of my fathers were kind of absent in the home because they were always working. There's nothing really wrong with any of them. They just weren't available to raise me because they were either working swing shifts or there was something else going on. And I was kind of a latchkey kid. So there's all kinds of different types of fatherlessness, and I've kind of experienced a little bit of everything. And plus, I've also been in that position where I was working with a child in my previous marriage. He was my stepson, and he didn't know who his biological father was. So I've kind of seen it, you know, the 360. I've been a part of all of it, and I kind of have a really good grasp on it now, or at least I think I do.
Sure. No, absolutely. And so you bring in your experience and your wisdom of fatherlessness in all different angles. And I want to talk a little bit more actually about like the self-exploration phase. You want to talk a little bit about that before we even move forward? Because that sounds kind of interesting. What was it that led you to even, you know, do more self-exploration and decide to, you know, take the fatherhood thing on?
Well, I would say probably it really began probably about 5 or 6 years ago as well. You know, it probably began with the coaching thing because I think, you know, the training that I went through required me to kind of dig deep inside myself and understand my personal worldview and my experiences and how they may affect me and other people. And the significant event that really changed my life was my grandfather passed away when he was visiting my house one time. Just had his last heart attack. And just wasn't able to overcome it in sleep. And that was probably my hugest supporter when I was growing up. It was the man that pretty much raised me that was there when my father's couldn't be there. You know, and he raised me from a distance, but he also was present a lot because I always felt his presence because if I did something, he found out about it. And I would get a phone call or, you know, he would mention it when he was visiting my house on the weekends to see his grandkids. So he always kind of kept me in check. And there's a few other guys along the way that also did that and helped me out. But, you know, the exploration part, you know, is really understanding your own personal worldview and exploring that. And I did a lot of research on leadership and manliness. And I went through that whole stage, you know, and what it's supposed to be like to be a father. And when do you feel like you have arrived, you know, when is that moment, you know, and you get to these places where you get to one level and it feels great for a week. And then you're searching for the next level, you know, it's never enough. And, you know, I realized that I had a lot of competitiveness in me. And a lot of that is driven from wanting to compete with other men because I didn't have a father. And, you know, it's almost like you're trying to impress somebody, you know, but you have that constant drive because you're competing with everybody else and you were missing that aspect of your life, you know, that upbringing, that fatherliness that, you know, and you, when you have children of your own, you're kind of like, what does that look like for me? Because I never got that experience. You know, I didn't have a father that was present and engaged in the home. And so that was part of my exploration phase. And I had to talk to my mother a lot about, you know, her experiences and, you know, why, you know, I didn't have a father. And that was challenging for me, and that was heartbreaking, you know, and that tore me up inside a lot, and I had to go through that, you know. But it was things of that nature, you know. I had to explore my own divorce, my challenges with my stepchildren, then, you know, remarrying and having 3 more children. So I had to go through all those different phases and explore those. And a lot of that was through writing and journaling and turning in, you know, assignments and things of that nature through my training, which really helped me understand kind of who I was inside and kind of helped me understand my purpose.
Yeah. I'm doing similar work right now for a coaching course that I'm going through and really having to kind of dig deep, take a step back and really explore a lot of different angles that I've never had to explore before. You get the questions and you just kind of have to dig deeper. But the one thing about coaching is, and this is a thought that I had today as I came home from the urgent care because I cut my finger, is that, you know, we know what we're capable of, right? But a coach helps us see what is beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I think we can do the deep work. We can do the inner work. We don't need a coach to be any more better than the life that we know. It's the life that's unexplored, the life that we don't even really consider or think that exists that a coach can help us with.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, definitely. I was, I think the best way I've heard it put so far out of, you know, the 5 or 6 years I've been doing this, and working with people, you know, from a leadership standpoint, is a coach is your external eyes and ears who show you your reality or tell you your reality. And I got that from a TED talk I was watching one time about a surgeon, and he had perfected his art, you know, or at least he had thought he had did. He was one of the best surgeons in the country or the world. And he was working with, you know, operating rooms in Africa and helping them go through processes and helping, you know, increase the expectancy of live birth children. And he went back and he discovered that he had picked up bad habits and traits along the way. Hmm. And he invited his college professor in to kind of monitor him and watch him. And then one of the things he said was he was starting to raise his elbows out when he was in surgery. And the professor basically told him, he says, when you do that, you lose control of your instruments. You want to keep your arms tucked into you. So there was little bitty things that he was doing, even one of the best in the country, that he needed to work on. And one of the things he said was, is that even athletes, right? Athletes know there's always another level. There's always something to work on. And that's why athletes have a coach, even the best. They all have a coach. They all have somebody working with them, showing them things that they see that they're doing wrong that they can't see themselves.
No, that's awesome. That's all. Yeah, that's it. It's definitely. Do you remember the name of the TED Talk?
No, I don't know off the top of my head. I'll have to shoot that to you. I'll have to look for it.
That's all right. No,
you know, a couple weeks ago. So it was pretty profound for me and impactful when I heard that statement. I was like, yeah, that's exactly it.
That's it. Yeah, it's a great, definitely great story about, you know, how a coach plays into our lives. So, you know, we talk a little bit about, you know, raising, growing up and, you know, your grandfather passing. What about some other men that have helped you in lieu of your father?
Yeah, I would say the first one that I can remember off the top of my head was my shop teacher. I was in woodworking class in high school, and I had this shop teacher for about 5 years because I had taken shop classes in when I was in junior high. And I was just, at that point, I was probably like a sophomore in high school, and I was just acting out. And I was just causing trouble, and I just wanted to be kicked out of the class. And I was just being a jerk to everybody, right? Yeah. And I was just mad. I was just mad at the world. I mean, I had this weight of the world on my shoulders, and you know, life wasn't fair and it wasn't going to get any better. And my life sucked, you know, and I had nothing, you know, and it wasn't going to amount to anything at that point because I had all these self-limiting thoughts in my head. And a guy pulled me to the side, actually took me out in the shop, pulled me into his office in the other room, stopped class completely. And then he said, "What is your problem?" You know, just like that. And I just started spilling the beans. You know, I just started telling him about everything that was going on in my life. And I just needed somebody to say, "What is your problem?"
Yeah.
And, and it was amazing because, through that conversation about 3/4 of the way through, I started to see him tearing up.
Mm.
And I was just telling him about, you know, my life and how I grew up and my abandonments. And, you know, I'd lived in a trailer park for a while after we, you know, my mother got divorced and, you know, when we're going through all these things and I didn't have much and you know, you could see it was tearing him up, you know, it hurt him inside. And, after we pretty much had that conversation, he basically said, he goes, "If you need anything or you need to talk to anybody, I'm always here. Don't think that you're too big to come and have a conversation with me." Yeah. He said, "If you're in trouble or something's bothering you, you can always come talk to me and you'll be in a safe place." He says, "But if you tell anybody I ever cried in front of you, I'll punch you in the nose." And we've had lots of conversations since then. I mean, he was a really great man, you know, and it was one of those moments that I realized that people actually really do care about you. And I was at that moment where I didn't think anybody really cared. Mm. And I needed that, you know. Yeah. And this guy, man, you wouldn't think he would be a crier. But because he was like, you know, the exact phrase he put to me was, I'm a lion. I'm soft inside, but I'm tough on the outside. And he was. Sure. He had rough hands. You know, he was stocky. You know, he's worked with wood and metal and, you know, and all these things. And it was what you would think a man would be. Right. And just to see that, man, it just that really was a turning point for me. And I started to get on the right direction. And then my high school wrestling coach talked me into joining the team that year. And that's where my work ethic really came into its own. Being out on that wrestling floor and just somebody giving me the opportunity and then, you know, and just continuously encouraging me and actually, you know, making it pretty far, farther than anybody probably really expected me to go, farther than I expected myself to go. So that was a surprise. And, you know, that really taught me, you know, hard work. You know, if you just work hard, people will recognize that and give you the opportunity. And that's what he did. He didn't care who I was, where I came from, or what I was doing. He was just like, hey, I'm going to give you a chance. You either going to do it or you're not. And I got out there and I did it and, you know, overcame some challenges and stuff. But I continued with it and pressed on. And we had a few good conversations, you know, but he was a pretty big mentor of mine as well.
What were some of the challenges?
You know, just, you know, having – well, one of the things, when I was a junior, I had to compete with a sophomore who was about the same weight as me. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure from one of my fathers. Don't get beat by a sophomore, you know, and there was that kind of thing. And there was a lot of pressure there, and I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. But, you know, there was also, you know, trying to stay at a certain weight, you know, trying to work another job at the same time I was wrestling, because I pretty much paid my way, you know, once I got to a certain age. Mm-hmm. I started washing dishes when I was 14. I decided that enough was enough, and, you know, my parents didn't have much to give me, so I needed money. So I bought my own shoes, I bought my own stuff, and they provided the roof and the food, but everything else I had to get myself. Sure. If I wanted a video game, I had to earn the money to get it. So it was tough, but, you know, I think it taught me a lot in life. So
builds character.
Yeah, it definitely does.
I hate washing dishes too.
I don't do them anymore. I don't even like to load the dishwasher. So.
Oh my God, I hated washing dishes. I used to work at a Mexican restaurant, Chi-Chi's, as a matter of fact, and like all the cheese would always get cooked onto the plates. Man, that was the worst. The worst. Thanks for those fond memories, Kirby. Yeah. You talked a little bit about you know, going through a divorce too. How would you say that that's shaped you? And would you say that it's helped you more or hurt you more?
I think it helped me more, actually. I hate to say that.
Sure.
You know, divorce is not a great thing. And today I probably wouldn't have the same views. I think, you know, if it was a different time or different story, I'd probably say you stick with it and you work it out. Did I get married for the wrong reasons the first time? Yeah. I had no clue what marriage was and what it was about. And I was really too young and too ignorant to understand what marriage was about. And I just didn't value it the way I should have. But when I did get divorced, I had made a decision at that point. And it was a very decisive decision that I didn't like who I was. I didn't like the person I had become. And I needed to change that because I didn't want to be like my other dads. You know, really wasn't anything wrong with them. They just weren't available. And there were some things that they said and had done that I didn't approve of or didn't like. And when I look back, I was like, I'm turning out just like them, you know, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to go around that, you know, do that a second time. And that really made a difference for me. And I knew that, you know, I had to do something. And I got back to doing the things that I really loved and enjoyed, you know, and a lot of that was doing some mixed martial arts, getting back in the gym. I haven't done it in a long time since then, but, you know, that helped me clear my head, you know, get a lot of frustration and anger out, and get my head clear. And then I started running. I was going through some back problems and stuff, you know, and a lot of the stress and was, you know, creating more problems for my back. And it was just, you know, it was that time. I mean, it was just, I had the realization was that I wasn't doing anything to benefit myself at that point. And if I didn't make a change, then, you know, I might not have nothing later.
And that
have those people or those relationships. And it kind of gets to that turning point. I spent through some of my coaching training, I had to go to some AA classes and monitor group coaching. And I listened to those guys talk, and, you know, and when they talk about, you know, when they come to that realization, it's almost the same thing. It's like, okay, look, I have to do this today or I might not be here tomorrow. Or I might not have my family tomorrow, or I might not, you know, have my house or my home tomorrow. You know, it's like, I've got to do something today because I'm at rock bottom. And I was kind of where I was at the time.
Have you struggle yourself with alcoholism or anything else?
I used to for a while. You know, when I was having some serious back problems, I was actually taking prescription drugs and alcohol at the same time because I didn't think the doctors were helping me. I just didn't think they were listening. You know, it was more therapy, more this, more that. And I didn't think they were getting after the problem. The only thing I knew to turn to was, you know, Liquid Demon. And I went there, and it helped for a while. But then I realized that things were slowly disappearing on me, and I had to make a change. You know, and I've been able to do that. I've been lucky enough that I haven't had a whole lot of help doing it as far as professionally. Mm-hmm. I've just gotten to those points where I'm like, you're screwing up, you know, and it's kind of like that old shop teacher pull you aside and gets in your face and says, what's your problem? Right. And then you kind of straighten your act back up and go forward again. So I'm restarting times.
That's all right, man. I'm hearing a lot of self-awareness though, and a lot of intentional and purposeful living. Happened more recently? Is that something that you've kind of always had? And you know, talk a little bit towards that.
Yeah, I think I got more purposeful whenever I got married the second time around. I had to make a change, you know, and I didn't want to make the same mistakes. And I wanted to have, raise another family, a second family. And, you know, I'm three kids into that one now. And
so you're doing that.
Yeah, we're good there in that department. But, you know, I just didn't want to make any mistakes. So, you know, and one of the other things is that my wife did for me, and I think is really helped me become more purposeful, was we are both struggling, you know, with our faith and everything else at the time. I was pretty far away. Somebody came up to me and said, hey, you know, you ever thought about, you know, having a relationship with Jesus? I'd have been like, you're crazy. Get out of my face, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is the way I was. I grew up in a family that didn't really go to church. I had some grandparents that were, had a lot of faith, but that never really came down through my parents, and they really didn't participate in that. And I think that changed me. And that helped me become more purposeful and having that relationship and understanding what that's about. And she was going through the same thing. She had lost some real good friends in a car accident, and they had helped her get to the point where she was. And then she lost them at the same time. And that really broke her heart. And, you know, she was struggling with that. And so we kind of said, hey, let's do this together. Let's figure this thing out. Let's, you know, we don't want to have the same kind of environment that our parents, you know, raised us in. We want to make a difference. We want to change. And so we purposely sought out, you know, a particular denomination, and, or we searched them all really. And we figured the one that kind of best fit our ideas and values. And then we went from there. Some of the other stuff, as far as the purposefulness comes from, reading Rick Warren's book, you know, Purpose Driven Life.
That's the second time I've heard that tonight. Yeah, yeah. And I had not heard it before.
So I got it right here.
That's awesome. So
by my bedside. So
is that one that you read often? You say you've got it by your bedside. Yeah. You read it a couple times?
Yeah, I've read it a couple times. I actually pick it up every once in a while. I flip through the chapters and find something that I might be going through, and I just read that chapter. You know, it's maybe like 5 or 6 pages or something like that per day. You know, and it just kind of resets your mindset. You know, and some of the other things, being purposeful, really, I went to a seminar one time, and a guy named Greg Gunn, And he talks about living with an intentional direction in your life. You know, he talks about how there are families that have gone three or four generations, family businesses, and then they disappear. And he talks about how the original man or gal that starts the business, they had this vision, right? This mission, this purposeful, you know, they want to fix a problem or some kind of issue or challenge, and they want to bring some change to the world. And they start it out. And as it passes from each succeeding generation, they lose sight of the vision and the purpose because they get further and further away from the originator. And he talks about that. He talks about having an impact with families several generations down the road by creating this vision for the family and creating this mission statement and creating a family ID. That's what his program's called, Family ID, but it's your family's identity. And your family carries this with them. And as your, you know, sons and daughters marry and they come bring their husbands and wives to the fold or the family, they also help adopt that, or they take a piece of that family ID with them. And then they develop their own because they're two individuals coming together. And I really latched on to that, you know, and he talks about, you know, families in America today where they're kind of like cookie dough, you know, and you mix them, M&M's here, some chocolate chips here, and you know, you're just kind of mixing it together, and you know, and you put it in the oven, and out they come. And when your kids turn 18, some of them are burnt, some of them are just right, some of them are not, you know, cooked enough, you know, and everybody kind of arrives, right? Arrives at a different point in their life, you know. That's kind of like childhood development. Some kids accelerate faster than others.
Sure.
But when they, you know, people ask you like, what happened? And people are like, hey, we did the best we could, you know, and we provided the best environment for them, and they just didn't, you know, fly. And so other ones, they didn't do anything, and they turned out great. You know, and he talks about the thing that he thought was missing through all this was having a family vision, having a agreed upon, and this is an entire family has to come together to decide this. So if you have two or three-year-olds, it's a little more difficult, but you have a destination in life that you want to head. You have, you know, a legacy that you want your family to carry on from generation to generation to generation. And he's really impactful. And I thought his program was great. And that was one of the things that kind of changed my life, because when he started talking about vision and mission, I kind of latched onto that. And he also incorporates values a lot. So those are that's one of the guys that really had an impact on me. And I only spent an 8-hour day with him. So, and it's just incredible that somebody, you can spend an 8-hour day with somebody and they have that much influence on you, you know, and plant those seeds in your head moving forward.
Right. No, that's great. The, and so, you know, finding the faith and having the family vision, they both sound like they're playing a real big part in what you're doing now, and in being intentional. With the fatherless fathers, what is something that you're finding is helping them to find their own intention, right? Or, you know, maybe even before they can find their purpose, or what are some things that you're finding with them that's really helpful just to get them started, like help them build momentum, move them forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, the question always comes up, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, is when have you arrived, you know, what is this, you know, magical or, you know, equation that we're all seeking? And I think you really have to create that on your own. And, you know, that's something that you have to decide on your own. What is that and what does it look like? It's going to be different for everybody, because none of us are the same. We all have different experiences, different makeups, different backgrounds. So it's only going to, you have to define what success is for yourself. You know, I think we get too caught up in, you know, the media's version of success. You know, you have to have the fast car, the great looking woman, the 20, you know, bedroom mansion, you know, the pool, you know, with the gazebo, you know, or whatever they call that, gazebo. But, you know, you gotta really define that for yourself, because that may not be possible for everyone. And I don't know, I've been on this kind of happiness search or kick And, you know, how do you define that, right? What is true happiness? What is that authentic happiness? There's a guy out there named Martin Seligman. He's the father of positive psychology, and he talks a lot about it. You know, one of the things that, you know, I talk to fatherless men about is, and it's, he mentions it in his book, is that the Constitution doesn't guarantee happiness, but it guarantees the pursuit of happiness. So it's something that you're going to pursue and you're going to continue to pursue, because like I said before, you're going to get to that level and you're going to be like, hey, this is great for a week or maybe even a month, but then guess what? It's not going to be enough. And you're going to want to get to that next level, you know, and you're going to want to keep climbing the ladder. And so I think for me, it's knowing that I'm making progress every day, that I'm every day I get up and I'm better than I was yesterday, or I'm going to be better than I was. I'm going to do something today that makes me better than I was.
And I is that like a mantra you have? Is that an affirmation that you have for yourself?
Pretty much. Yeah. I hear it almost every day. So, and that's something I kind of tell myself, even when I get out there and I run, you know, hey, I may be sucking that day, but you know what? As long as I put in more effort today than I did yesterday, you know, who cares? I mean, if I just don't get that time, or if I, you know, I don't get the mileage in, but I gave it all I had, you know, and I pushed myself, you know, and it goes with anything that I do. It's, you know, 5 more minutes with the kids. It's, you know, exercise a little bit more patience to kind of get the kid on the bike and out the door and, you know, trying to get him to ride it, you know, and help develop him. You know, it's that 5 more minutes at the kitchen table, you know, and it's just, you know, constantly trying to push myself outside of my comfort zone, because it's so easy to sit there and say that, you know, hey, that's good enough for today. I'm going home. You know, you're never going to grow sitting on your couch. You got to push yourself beyond your limits. And
where do couch potatoes grow, Kirby?
Yeah, I found that's probably been the biggest challenge for fatherless men and myself is the being uncomfortable.
You have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Sure. That's just the way it is. And I, you know, I've been in many moments now in the last several years where I didn't really want to do it, but I made myself do it. And at the end of the day, I was like, it wasn't that bad, you know, and I got something out of it. So
sure. What would an experience like that be?
Well, recently, I would say in the fall, actually, I'm a member of a Toastmasters club, and we're a pretty small club. We only got 5 or 6 members, because we're out in rural Missouri down in South Central, and we didn't have anybody that wanted to participate in the impromptu speaking contest. We call it Table Topics, and so I was like, well, you know what? We need a representative, so I'm going to go do it, you know, because nobody else wanted to do it. And usually that's what happens to me, is that nobody else wants to do it, so I stick my neck out there.
Sure.
And so I went, and I showed up, and I didn't expect to do anything, but I ended up winning first place.
Wow.
And I really found a whole nother level when I got out there in front of people and started talking. And when I did, I was talking about myself and my history and my passions, you know, because the first question they asked me is, would you rather be a musician, an athlete, or an artist? Well, I want to be an athlete. Obviously, I umpired for several years, and I played baseball and I wrestled. So I talked about my passion as an athlete in baseball and umpiring. Then I went off to the division contest, and they asked me a quote that I – or a piece of knowledge that I would impart on a newborn baby's mind, if I could impart one piece of knowledge. And I just told them life is like follow-throughs. Or life is like golf. It's all about the follow through. And I kind of explained that process and what that looked like. That was a quote that I had first learned when I joined the Army about 20 years ago. And my boss had told me that. And it was all about customer service. And it was all about following up with a customer. Always follow through and follow up. If you tell them to do something, follow through. And after you've done that, follow up with them to make sure that, you know, they got what they wanted. And that was one of the values he kind of instilled in me, which is another person that had a huge impact in my life 20 years ago. But, you know, and then I got to the district, which I'm standing on stage in front of like 300 people, and they're all in their, you know, evening attire, you know, kind of a formal dress type thing. And they asked me the one question I couldn't answer, and that was impart it, or tell us the first joke that was impart it on your, or tell us the first joke that you had committed to memory. And I'm not a funny guy. I had no jokes in my pocket except for a one that I heard one of my stepdads tell. And I was not going to tell that joke. And I will never tell that joke ever again.
All right.
It was kind of degrading to my mother. Okay. So it was just one of those types of jokes. Sure. I refused to tell that on stage.
Yeah.
And so I just had to mumble and bumble my way through it.
Mm.
And I got done and I was mad and my face was on fire. You know, I was like, how could they ask me a question like that? You know, the humor speaking contest is tomorrow night. I'm at contest. You know, right. I had pumped myself up on this 2-hour drive. You know, was trying to get ready for it and, you know, trying to get myself ready like a prize fighter, you know, sure. right before a big match. And I was like ready to go. I had all the intensity going and they wanted me to be funny. It was a complete, like, my shoulders went down, you know, and I'm doing all the things that you're not supposed to do. But I made it through it and I got off that stage. And what was really incredible about it, even though it was a scary moment, because I could have just walked off at the moment, but I stayed there and I gave it everything I got. And I had about 12 people that walked up to me and said, that was amazing. And I'm like, are you crazy? I was like, that was the worst performance ever, you know? And they're like, no. They're like, you don't understand. I couldn't do that. They're like, you did an amazing job and you had no idea what to say. You had no joke to back yourself up with, not even anything to be funny about. And they're like, but you did it. You got up there, you explained to us why you didn't have the joke, you know, and your personality, and you described all these things, and that was it. And that, those people coming up to me, it took me about an hour to kind of like relax and calm down and stuff, you know, and, you know, I'm embarrassed, you know, and
sure.
But it was pretty incredible, you know, that people kept coming up the next couple of days during that conference and just saying, hey, man, that was incredible. You know, I don't know if I could have ever done something like that. And that was just kind of, that was kind of rewarding for me because I was out there doing something and I probably inspired probably about a dozen people that probably were afraid to make that next step. And they may compete next year. You know, take that challenge and they may, you know, try and push themselves out of their comfort zone. So that was one of my unfamiliar comfort zones. And I still don't have a joke in my back pocket. I still haven't learned my lesson. So,
You know, that's it. I think that in that situation, it's awesome that you went ahead, you stepped into it, you made it further than you had thought you would. You floundered, but you still impacted people. I think right here, though, is where we can take some of the examples. I'm sure that you, when you're working with the fatherless fathers, impart on them how our self language is, right? So, I mean, you're probably sitting up there beating yourself up for a little bit. And then, you know, my guess is at some point you came to a realization, you're like, why am I talking to myself this way? You want to share a little bit of like, you know, kind of how you got over, you know, how you were talking to yourself and like kind of how you exited that?
Well, the thing I was telling myself is just get to the 1-minute mark so you can get off the stage. Cause at the 1-minute mark, you get the green light and you can go. And if you go 2 minutes, you get the red light and 2:30, you get disqualified. So it's, you want to average about 1:30 to 2 minutes. And so once I got that green light, I kind of closed it out. I think where you're getting at is that happened to me afterwards. So it was the post conference. I was on my way home. Of course, I had a 2-hour drive to get back home, and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, how am I going to overcome this? Because I just flopped, you know. I did the best I could, you know, and I knew I inspired some people, but you know, how am I going to get back on stage? How am I going to get back on the horse? Because I know I was doing some things. And I know that when I was up there, I felt all the nerves come back. I felt the pressure, the nervousness and some of the other things that I was doing. I recognized off the bat that I was doing them. I just couldn't control them at the time. And because I was in a very awkward position at the moment. You know, and I had gotten to a certain point and I had gone backwards. Like, how am I going to get back? So I decided that I'm going to do my next 10 speeches 10 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. And I was going to use, you know, 5-minute speeches, but I was going to earn my competent communicators or competent leaders education award in Toastmasters within a few months. And I said, you know, I'm just going to do it. And I don't care what it takes. I'm just going to do it. And I've been procrastinating all year to do it, and I've just been getting up there and doing the minimum, and I'm going to go for it. And in that process, I actually kicked that level up another. So I've got a goal to become a distinguished Toastmaster in 2 years.
Wow.
And so I've been hunting it. And that's how I describe it. I've been hunting. And that has gotten me to the point where I got a phone call from our area director the other day. And I had actually requested to be, or put a self nomination in, and a couple other guys had put a self nomination in for me to be the area director to replace him because his tenure is up. And he actually called me and said, "Hey, they're considering you for the next level up. They're actually just trying to consider you for the division level," which is pretty incredible. I mean, I had no aspirations for that, but you know, they were like, "Hey, yeah, that's what they want you to do," because they recognize your ability and your hunger and, you know, your leadership skills. So they really want you to take that position. So I'm waiting to find out the decision that was made. I don't know how many people were nominated, but that was pretty good news the other day that, you know, all that work I'd done after that to kind of get back to where I was, it's really paying out now. So
and that really kind of stemmed from something you didn't even want to do.
Right. Yeah.
And being uncomfortable. So very cool. What, you know, when you're doing this, how do you feel like you're impacting your children? How do you feel like, are helping them?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm just leading by example. I actually sent out an email to my email list the other day and talked about that, you know, and it's the 31-mile race. It's the getting up on stage and, you know, becoming that distinguished Toastmaster. It's taking the hard jobs and not being afraid of what happens. I mean, you could fail, right? But they can't take your ability away from you. You can't take your purpose. They can't take your potential away from you. You own all that. Yeah, and you own your story. So nobody can take that away from you. And I think just living like that, showing my children that I'm not afraid, that I'll accept challenges, and that I will continue to strive for greatness, even though perfection is probably with outside of my reach, right? It's probably outside of everybody's reach. Nobody's perfect, you know, but we're always striving for that. And that's just something that I want to show them that, you know, you can do whatever you set your mind to. And regardless, like 90% of the thoughts that go through our head every day are negative thoughts anyway. So it's overcoming that and overcoming all the chatter that's around you. You know, people will tell you that you can't do something. You know, people will put you down and they will say, you know, you're a kid from, small town USA and, you know, nobody's ever come out of that town and done anything, you know, and you've come from a divorced family, you know, you've come from a broken family. You're not, you know, you might want to just go and get a factory job. That's all you're going to amount to. And that's why I want to show my kids they can overcome any of those limitations, and the sky is the limit. So
that sounds like you're setting the model for living out a dream. And I think that's incredible because a lot of people, you know, I've even been guilty of telling my children, you know, you can dream and become whatever you want to become. But prior to setting up the podcast and Fatherhood for the Rest of Us, I wasn't really trying to live out anybody's dream other than, you know, I think what you had talked about earlier, living the societal norm in the office and just doing, you know, kind of, I guess a sheep. Right. Just kind of following the herd and doing whatever seemed like the right thing without really putting too much into it. And then realizing that there's a dream that can be had and the dream doesn't have to occur by a certain age. You can continue to dream and work towards a goal. And by doing that, by doing what you're doing, you're showing your children that, you know, you can persevere and you work hard and you go towards a goal and a dream. And when you tell your own children to dream and do it, they have a model to follow. How does that make you feel?
No, it makes me feel great. You know, if I was to be gone tomorrow, I think that my children would have that example set for them. And I think that enough people would be able to tell them stories about what I have done and what I've accomplished that I think that I would set the example for them. And even they would probably tell stories to their children I believe that I've already achieved that. But that doesn't make me want to stop, right? I still want to continue to pursue that. And to capitalize a little bit on what you were saying earlier, in that monologue was, you know, when I was a kid, I dreamed of being an athlete, right? I wanted to be a baseball player. Well, 39 years old, that's probably not going to happen, right? It could, but it's probably not. It's probably not realistic.
I saw The Rookie. It can happen, dude.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so, you know, I've actually ran on, you know, what's it called? Field of Dreams. I've been on the Busch Stadium, and I've played, you know, an old Busch as a kid in high school, but I never really got to the semi-professional, even professional level. So I've kind of felt what that was like, but I never got to do that. But I turned my dream into reality in another way. And that's being an athlete and running, finding something that I was good at, you know, and running. You know, running 31 miles, you know, and in a few weeks I'll have a 100-mile weekend, you know. It's doing those things, you know, and showing them that, yeah, you know, I may have had to alter my dream a little bit, but I can still pursue it. You know, I can still achieve that status or that recognition that I'm looking for. And it's something I'm good at, and it's something I enjoy, and it's something that brings me peace, you know. And that, you know, and that's probably one of the things that I would say that really helped me with all the struggles and all the trials and challenges that I grew up with, and even getting clarity was running. You know, when you get out there, I mean, I can start, and, you know, 10, 15 miles later, I'm like, oh, man, I'm done, you know, because I got lost in my thoughts while I was out there. And that's been really – you know, something that's really helped me. And I hope that my kids will see my love and passion for that, and they'll want to do that as well. We can do it as a family. You know, that's something I've been thinking about the last few days, is what are those things that we can do together as a family that we enjoy, you know, and that we can, you know, did you see those families out there? They go out there and run a marathon together. You know, they're pushing the baby strollers, and the kids are running next to them. And, you know, they're doing it as a family together as one unit. And I've been thinking more and more about that as my boy is 4, the other one's 2, and my daughter's 3 months now. And, you know, what does that look like? You know, what are the things that we're going to do that we actually have something, you know, where we come together in? Because, you know, families today, they're spread apart. You know, you got Jill's got cheerleading practice, Johnny's got basketball, Dad's got Moose Club, Mom's got Auxiliary Ladies Club. You know, we're all moving in different directions. But when do we come together?
Right.
When do we come together as a family? And when do we do something together? And that's, you know, some people do it at the dinner table. Some people do it at church. You know, some people do it in different ways. So I've been kind of trying to think through that. And what can I do now to start to develop that in my family? That way that in 20 years, we're still there doing it together, you know, so.
And you're looking at running.
Right. Well, that's for me.
Sure. No, but, no.
It's something that, you know, maybe my kids get into that. Maybe they don't. I mean, It's you got to find that. You got to explore that. You know, you got to find, everybody's got to have buy-in. So if they don't like it, they don't like it. It'll be my thing, and we'll find something else to do together. But
I'm surprised your wife let you go run 31 miles with a three-month-old at home, man.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Actually, she was, we were in Kansas City, so she had her mother's help.
All right. There you go. All right.
So I kind of take advantage of going to the in-laws.
Yeah. Hey, you got to do what you can do. Congratulations on your newness, man. 3 months. I remember the days, man. I kind of miss them. I miss that stage where they can't move at all, where they don't roll off the bed. They don't talk back. And, you know, it's kind of fun, right? It's just that moment where if you do lay down and take a break, and that weight, it's amazing. I love the weight of a child, like your own child, right? Like just kind of laying on your chest and hanging out with you.
Yeah, I like the little feet running through the house and just getting into things. And I think I acquired that taste because my grandfather was the same way. You know, you get on the floor, you can play, and you can roll around and do some rough housing and things like that. I remember those days. I remember watching him be goofy and silly, and you can actually, you know, 39-year-old man acting like a child, you know, just playing. And some people think it looks silly, but, you know, it brings something out in you, you know. And I really enjoy those moments where I can do that. And, you know, just looking at my daughter now, and, you know, when she wakes up and you talk to her and, you know, and she smiles and that you get that expression on her face, you know. It's just, you know, for me, that brings a lot of joy and light in my life. So the kids are a big part of my life. And why I continue to do the things that I do. it's not for me. It's really for them, you know, cool. It's help them have a better life than I had, sure. You know, and kind of had I hate to say better role models, but you know, my parents just weren't able to be present and engaged, you know, and some of that was no fault of their own. So I want to be that parent. I want to be present and engaged for my children. And I want to help them get to a point where they didn't have to go through the same struggles that I did and have to figure it out. Not the hard way. They're going to have to learn some lessons the hard way, but not repeat my lessons. So
I love it. What is one thing or two things that you would thank your children for? Say 10 years goes by. What do you think you'll thank them for?
Oh man, that's a tough question. I have never thought about that. Giving me purpose would be one. If it wasn't for my children, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today. I probably wouldn't be clean and sober and I'd probably be a miserable person. And the thing that I love the most about my kids is just the hugs, you know, just the authentic hugs, man. That's just, for some reason, you know, I mean, my kids come downstairs from sleeping at night, you know, and they come downstairs and they sit on your lap and they give you a hug and they just sit there and chill out and watch cartoons together. Those are special moments for me. Even though there's really nothing going on, it's just that bond, you know, it's quiet, you know, we're just sitting there watching something on TV and it's just, you know, and it's that authentic love. And you don't get that too much, you know, except from kids.
All right.
And that's pretty special. So I would thank them because those are the things that keep me going every single day.
That's great. That's great. So, you know, bringing you some joy, right? Bringing you joy and purpose. Hey, those are great things to thank anybody for. I know that I can agree with you that without my kids, I'd probably be a hotter mess. I don't know. More of a mess than I already am. And so I'm thankful for them in my lives as well. And is there anything that you think that you want to cover that maybe we didn't on today's podcast?
No, not really. You know, I mean, just, you know, to kind of, I guess, finish up on that, you know, it's incredible responsibility to raise kids. And I think that you have to really understand the purpose behind it, you know, and what you're supposed to do. And it's not so much about you. It's more about them, and it's raising them in a way that they have an impact on the world, or you give them an opportunity or a chance to have an impact on the world and make it better than, you know, well, the way you left it. And, you know, it's just, I have this, you know, this strive for citizenship, you know, having this, and I think a lot of that comes from, you know, 20 years of military service, but having that dedication to, you know, be an upstanding citizen and, you know, contribute not only to the your personal development, but your family and your community as well. And I think those are very important things to instill in your children. I think that we've probably missed the boat on that a little bit in the last couple of generations.
What would you, Kirby, I think that's great that you bring up citizenship. Just thinking about that over this past week myself. I know I missed the boat on being a good citizen up until more recently. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I'm it's something that I'm doing more of, being more engaged with the community, being more engaged with other services, being of service. I think that that's something that I think that the 80s and 90s didn't really teach so well. Right. I mean, if it's, I'm just, that's just what I'm seeing.
Things were different. Things were different.
Yeah. So, could you talk a little bit more about like what citizenship means and maybe how we can include that more in our lives? What can we do to be better citizens?
You know, one of the things that I constantly repeat, you know, and in my coaching and what I hope I develop in other people is that they become pillars of the community. Somebody that you can lean on in a time of need. Everybody has a unique talent or skill that they have, you know, and nobody has the same makeup of talents and skills. The chances of that are incredible, right? The chances of us even being on this earth are like 1 in 400 trillion. And so each one of us is a miracle. And so we'd be fools if we wasted the opportunity to, and that's the way I personally feel is if I waste that opportunity, then I'm a fool, to impact somebody else's life, except for, you know, my inner circle or my family or myself, and only be worried about me. Because there's a lot of suffering that goes on in the world. I've spent some time in Iraq and Egypt and Kuwait and some other places like that. And I've seen a lot of things that most people probably don't get the opportunity to see. You know, I've lived in DC and seen the homeless down under the bridge, you know, down there in Arlington, you know, and even in down in Washington, DC, you know, I've worked with inner city families, you know, where the fathers had been court ordered to parenting classes and help work with them and just seeing the challenges. A lot of those people have gone through traumatic situations and have a lot of trauma that they haven't been able to process or deal with yet. And one of the things that I'm currently working on right now is there's a program called CASA, and it stands for Court Appointed Special Advocate. And what you do is you go through a 5-week training program and you become a official of the court. And basically you go in and you work with children who had been placed in foster homes because their parents just weren't taking care of them for one reason or the other. Some of these kids are 8, 9 years old and they're telling their mom and dad to get off the couch and go buy groceries for them because they're out of groceries. You know, they're taking care of the parents. And some situations are worse than that and some aren't as bad. But, you know, I found that I have a heart and a talent for that. And so I'm going to, you know, place that passion and that desire to make a difference in an area or a program that can benefit from that. I tell people to follow their passions. You know, if you follow, you know, one of the things I also say, I don't remember who I got this from, but you follow your passions or don't chase the money. Chase your passion and the money will follow you.
Sure.
And so, and if you chase your passion, and you do the things that you're passionate about, you know, whether that's, you know, helping the homeless or, going on some mission trip to some country and digging a well or whatever it is you do, there's something that we all really care about and we should get involved. And that's all citizenship really is getting involved in your community some way, somehow. You know, maybe that you run for office and you want to make some changes because you don't like the roads, you know, or you don't like this or that. I mean, it's up to you what you do, you know, but you have a unique talent or skill and you need to utilize that for the better good of everyone else. Yeah.
Do something.
Because you're the only one that has that ability.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem.
I love it. Kirby, thank you very much. Where should we send people? And well, look, CASA, is that something that anybody can reach out to you about? Or
yeah, man, it's I think it's nationwide for the most part. I know it's pretty big here in Missouri. Where I'm at, we have a pretty big opioid problem, so there's a lot of kids that are in foster homes. There's probably over 100 kids in foster homes just in this county alone. I'm dedicated to working with the older boys. Some of them are in centers and places like that, and some are placed with foster families. But this is something that's near and dear to my heart is those adolescent boys. But yeah, you know, it's pretty much nationwide. It's an association, but it's court appointed special advocates. And it's a pretty unique program. You got to go through some drug testing, some background checks and things like that, and the training. But I think it's a rewarding process. And I think you get to learn a lot. You know, one of the things that I found out the other night was childhood development. We don't understand childhood development as much as we should. Hmm. There's a lot of things that I was getting wrong that I should have known after having 4 children, but I just didn't know. Because, you know, our kids go through the different stages and phases, but, you know, and every child's different, but, you know, there's a range. So you can learn a lot too. I mean, there's a lot of personal growth that goes with that. And sometimes, you know, for somebody to volunteer, that might be pushing them outside of their comfort zone.
All right.
And to answer your last question, you know, where people can go, you can just send people to, you know, kirbyingles.com, and that's it. I mean, you know, you'll go there and you'll find all the different social media accounts. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you know, just by searching Kirby Ingles. There's probably not too many people with that name running around. Right. So it's easy to find me.
Very cool. And you've got a good Facebook group running as well. What's the name of the Facebook group?
Yeah, it's Living with Purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you post a lot of nice content in there, get the thoughts going, and you get people engaged and get them going, man. So thank you for having that place available, and thank you for being on today, Kirby.
Hey, thanks a lot.